Greetings to all the listeners, and welcome to A Guide Through Art, a podcast which talks about the forms of artistic expression and how these works affect our understanding of human history, the world, and the effect of the work on our own cultural understanding. Now, let me introduce the panel that will be a part of this podcast. Can you introduce yourselves to the listeners?
Hi, I'm Em.
Hi, I'm Hecate.
I'm Diane.
I'm Kratos.
I'm Camel.
And I am Tone. Now that you know who's who, we'll be going into the Seven Continents artwork, but we are going to specifically look at six, starting with North America, going towards Australia, part of the Oceania region. Will you please join us on our artistic journey, learning how to analyze the art and how to appreciate these pieces to better understand our diverse worldly culture? Okay, now we're going to start with North America. North America is a pretty big prevalent continent that does a lot to do with the art because of artistic expression within North America, with the idea of Hollywood and the paintings to interpret our own selves. First of all, we are going to look at the image Nighthawks by Edward Hopper, painted in 1942 in the style of realism, and the scene is set in Chicago, Illinois. Now, let our panel of students take over and talk about this specific image.
I feel like it's sort of like it's made like post-World War II or like around that various area, right? And it sort of gives me isolation vibes.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. It's like a, you know, what is...
Uncanny Valley?
I don't know, but it's like...
I don't know, because...
Yeah, because like this
like it's longing. It gives a longing vibe, you know, like we're looking at an inside place, you know, staring at people who seem to be like very isolated, especially like the man, you know, who's drinking by himself or
I almost kind of see it as like it's really dark outside and like the only really bright spot is that one yellow wall, and like in that area is like the three people like kind of sitting there chatting, and then there's that one person like off to the side. Mm-hmm. But like it kind of looks like we're looking in from this place of isolation and we're seeing like this small place of like people who are not isolated.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it's sort of like the whole soldiers coming home, like there's with the man sitting, the man who's sitting by himself, he sort of gives me that vibe, like, he's coming home to these three people who've been here for, like, a while. Mm-hmm. And they're all settled, and he's trying to, like, find a place for himself.
Yeah.
I can view it the same way in World War II, but I can see it as well with the set of the city of isolationism as well. But I also think this could also be the time when FDR did his, The Day That Would Live in Infamy speech. For now, America is going into, the United States is finally going to go into World War II, in representing, like, the isolation of people knowing that a lot of their friends and family are not going to come back alive after these battles.
I feel like, that actually makes a lot of sense. There's a sense of emptiness in this painting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think you can really see it looking into it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, all the empty bar stools, like, somebody's supposed to be there, but, like, they can't.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you guys think of the second character of the city of Chicago within this image as well, and how that symbolizes the meaning of Edward Hopper's Nighthawks?
I feel like Chicago is, like, such a... I mean, it's known as one of the biggest cities in the States, right? Like, we got New York City, we got...
LA,
right? So... and even Washington, D.C., let's be honest here. So, like, having Chicago, which is such a big, booming city and is so lively, be so empty when it, like, seems that this should be an area that should be walked upon and should be populated with lots of people. I just think that having, like, this empty bar or, like, restaurant is just, it really showcases how... all these people are gone, and mm-hmm. there's like sort of a void in such a big city, and it can't be filled.
I've noticed that the girl has red hair and a red dress.
What do you think about that? Like, what is that?
There's a
how does that
lot
symbolize?
Of boys, and there's only one girl. So,
What does the red dress of the ginger within the image symbolizes, or how is it symbolic to the way of our discussion of isolationism?
She might be mad because red is like anger.
Anger towards like the events going on.
Mm-hmm. There's also the fact that like redheads and gingers tend to be isolated from outside. They don't fit in. Like for a while, ginger children were classified as special needs because they're hard to place because they wouldn't look like their families. So like the fact that she is wearing this color that stands out, like is she's sort of separating herself from everything else that's going on.
Mm-hmm. Also, I feel like she could be Irish.
Oh yeah, there's
and like there was Irish. I mean, there was this stigma on like the Irish throughout history. Like, people would not like hire Irish people, mm-hmm. so it was mm-hmm. like there would be signs in places, and it would be like, work needed, not Irish or mm-hmm. Jewish. Like, if you uh-huh. were Irish yeah. or Jewish, no, we don't want you here. Mm-hmm. But like maybe mm-hmm. I don't know. Don't think she's Irish, but just to play on that yeah. role of, like, the red hair and stuff, so.
Yeah, yeah, this also can remind me of some of the ideas of how we were, of how people were raised. Because if you look through kind of a biblical lens, the part of Judas, he, in art, he's usually depicted as with being a ginger. And a lot of people have that idea of gingers are considered to be evil and, like, betrayers. And within the image, we can kind of see the gingerness of the woman in the portrait to be the idea of accepting this fact, but also still trying to give emotion out to what is happening within the scene of Chicago within the midst of World War II during the war.
That like redheads and like red, it's a lot of times seen as very promiscuous.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was gonna say.
And so like she's sort of like trying, like she's connecting with people around her through this like version, through this like view of sexuality.
No, but I was also gonna like comment on. It seems to be like they're a couple, you know, the woman yeah. and the man. But it's like it doesn't seem like there's any love there. Like you
mm-hmm. know, this is like their last outing, like before he has to go to war.
Yes.
Yeah, his posture. They're like their posture yeah. is super like they're leaning.
Like
back
everyone in the like restaurant or like the establishment cafe. Is very tense. Like even mm-hmm. the worker or like the owner is very tense. Mm-hmm. Like I mean, since we mentioned the Day of Infamy speech by FDR, like what if they were listening to this? Like, you know, like what if this was a depiction of like how people felt? Right.
Yes.
Like,
mm-hmm.
The possibilities are endless.
Mm-hmm. They are. There's a lot of meaning when it comes to Nighthawk. Now we're going into another route of going through the lens of the Cherokee Nation with the Eagle Dance, a dance by Mo Popey. Pardon if I don't pronounce it correctly. It originates from the Cherokee culture and it was restored in 1929. How does this image symbolizes the idea of Native American suffrage within the United States of suppressing their own cultural identity for the white man to take over?
So the first thing I see or notice is the like bleak background as opposed to the very bright, colorful colors of the Native Americans. So mm-hmm. it can be like, you know, these are very colorful people and we've made them bleaker or we've mm-hmm. dulled their beauty and color that they have.
It also kind of like stands out, like there's only like the kind of negative space around it. It just kind of emphasizes that there's only one like person there. Like, so they're kind of like alone. Maybe it's kind of like that their culture has diminished and like numbers, I guess, like there's not as many people celebrating the culture or around to celebrate the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is I noticed that some of the feathers look kind of like bald eagle feathers, which can be like serve as a symbol for America, and maybe that's some sort of commentary on the fact that the country of America was built on the backs of natives and a lot of times at their expense or on their land and everything, and the fact that parts of like native culture and things bleed through to the United States, even though it is primarily controlled by the European people who came here after them.
I noticed that the two feathers on his head, they kind of look like bunny ears, and like, bunnies are like prey, so
no, let him cook. Works, that works. He's,
so that's actually pretty good. Yeah, that's actually pretty good. How does the bunny ears, within the image actually symbolizes your idea?
Because Native American religion is like being suppressed or some culture or, it's like being suppressed and the bunnies cannot like.
You got this. You're locked in. You're cooking.
Okay. Like bunnies aren't like, I don't know, like
they aren't able to like defend themselves. Maybe?
Yeah. Uh huh.
Okay.
I didn't look at that with this image, but once you made it, that makes a lot of sense because of the suppression that Native Americans have felt. And it reminds me of the 2023 Martin Scorsese movie, Killers of the Flower Moon, about the oil and how when Native Americans actually get more predominant and like have power, the white men want to take that away and want to have their own share of it, meaning that they want it towards them, not towards the other people, and not towards the natives that founded on their reservations, as with the Osage Nation in Killers of the Flower Moon and Molly Ringwald's character within that.
Another thing with bunnies is that they're very social creatures. And a lot of times Native Americans, when they were successful in, like, pushing back the colonists and everything, were because they were united. Like, I think there was a coalition of 7 Native nations that ended up uniting for a good portion of time. And I remember there was also another, it might be the same union, but they ended up having, like, a great influence on the United States Constitution because of this, like, because they had, they had nations. I can't remember the exact number though, which is very similar to how the states wanted to become united, but like also separate, which ended up having people from that native culture end up being present when they were drafting the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution.
Building off of what you said about social, like I feel like in their own community they're very tight and they're very, like, very social creatures. If you've seen how they've done some of their more traditional dances, you have people lining up, and it's a very social and big community that we've suppressed. And I think that adds to the, like, stance of the man in the image. He has kind of his arms spread out, which is, like, I feel like it symbolizes, like, freedom, you know? He's, like...
The liberation.
Yeah.
Here I am.
Yeah, here I am.
Also... Like, were you gonna say something?
Oh, I thought it was like, it looks like he's flying away.
Oh.
Oh.
Like, he might be trying to, like, separate himself from something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's a different perspective.
Like,
they're trying not to assimilate, kind of, mm-hmm. like, and lose their culture.
Mm. Oh, and, like, it kind of looks like he's, like, you know, kind of not looking back. You know how, you see how his face is not facing directly, but kind of slightly towards.
Yeah.
Like, he sees something behind, but he's not choosing to look directly. Mm.
Taking pride in his own culture.
Mm. At first, I didn't actually know that as a person. I thought it was, like, a mutant bird. With a and I thought, like, he was flying away from the sun or something.
Icarus? But Icarus was flying towards the sun.
Uh-huh. So. Oh, yeah. But maybe with the idea that maybe the Native Americans felt like they were one with the sun. That they were, the people that respected... They respected nature, and they took prowess and pride within there to become more with one in the earth than a lot of cultures and societies in today's world.
Another thing is sort of like a rebellion against the control that the federal government has over them, because it was either made or restored in 1929. And at that point, it's not really a question of, like, will the natives win or anything. The United States was very well established at that point. As mm-hmm. we all know, it wasn't that long ago. And it's sort of like this sort of rebellion against conformity, because it's very, like, it is clearly native. It's clearly Cherokee, or it's clearly, like, native. It is not at all pretending to be, like, any sort of European art or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very bold about that. Even though oftentimes native cultures were purposely suppressed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, after the after this discussion, very interesting discussion on the Native Americans, we're gonna go up to the icy north of Canada with the image Sawmills of Muskoka by Mary E. Rinch, painted in 1906, set in Ontario, Canada, in the style of realism.
Is it supposed to be on fire?
I think so.
It does look like it's on fire, yes.
I want to make sure, I want to make sure everyone agreed that it looked like it was on fire and I wasn't just imagining things.
I did not notice that.
I thought it was like pollution.
Yeah, you can definitely see the smoke.
What was going on in 1906? Is it like industrialization?
Industrialization happened way before then, mm-hmm. which was why we had sawmills like all throughout North America. Mm-hmm. So I feel like maybe, I guess it's... The smoke is sort of like they're burning down the sawmill and they're mm-hmm. getting ready to with crops sometimes you gotta like burn down the crops mm-hmm. in order to have new ones grow, so they're burning down the sawmill in order to have better things to come, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe mm-hmm. possibly
also it kind of like, do you think those little orange things on the shore, do you think they're like trees, do you think they're people?
I think that's just fire.
Because, like, these, like, there's, like, two people on the shore. And like, if they're people, then they're sort of, like, looking out. But, like...
I thought they were, like, people in jail suits.
Oh! Like a prison, like, sort of escaping prison? Like, escaping restrictions and stuff?
This kind of could remind me of, like, the idea of nature. Because sawmills are supposed to take away nature. But the fire of, like, natural disaster can take... back what once was there, and between the battle of human versus nature, the theme, a predominant theme in a lot of literary texts, of how humans self destroy their own creations while nature always prevails because of the human existence.
I like that, especially like when it's right next to all the water that's completely unaffected by like everything that's like so devastating to humans. The yes. water's still just there. The tide's still lapping.
Yeah, I kind of saw it as like this whole scene looks like very picturesque and beautiful if you take out the like smoky on fire sawmill, I guess. Like it looks like super pretty, like nature, right? Mm. But then there's like this man-made sawmill in the middle of it that kind of like ruins the image, I guess. Like it's no longer like this picturesque nature scenic, you know, painting. It's, you know, a sawmill. Like I don't know.
No, I think the colors, too, like, add on to what you said about, like, nature. When you think of nature, you think of very more brighter colors, like greens or, like, blues in the skies or something. But this looks, like, very meek, you know? Mm-hmm. The colors mm-hmm. are, like, darker. They're very blue, very grayish.
They're, like, muted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Could be a result from the industrialization. Like, we've ruined.
They look
ruined.
Like sad colors.
They look like mm-hmm. sad colors, yeah. They See. Look like sad colors. Mm-hmm. Very sad colors.
Very, very sad.
Okay, now we're going down into Latin America with The Flower Carrier by Diego Rivera, or Cargador
de Flores?
Sí. Cargador de Flores, sí. And painted in 1935 and is set on a farm, granja, or a field, campo, in Latin America, and it's the style of realism. This painting by Diego Rivera reminds me a lot of the suffering of farmers within Latin America and the idea of human rights being violated by picking up the flowers while the natives of Latin America struggled because of European intervention, trying to gain a lot of the resources for their own power.
I think it really just symbolizes like the struggle to keep up and keep culture alive during like
mm-hmm.
the boom of modern like. The boom and evolution of modern society, and just capitalism, due to the fact that, like, you know, in a capitalist society, like, it's very rare you find your vendors on the streets unless it's like a farmer's market or something. And I just think the the way he's kneeling on the floor as he tries to pick up the basket of flowers is just the struggle to keep culture alive and like a fast-paced society like we have now.
Right, he's sort of like he's like the chocolate farmers, or the fact that like everyone knows blood diamonds fuel military groups and everything like that. He is like providing something beautiful to others, like the flowers, at the expense of himself. But I also like saw it a little differently too, where it kind of seems like an act of love.
Yeah.
Like the woman who's tying or like helping him with the bag, I viewed it as either like a mother or a wife or a sister or something like that. And like they are trying to like move these flowers or like perform this beautiful act, and they're only able to do that because they work together and because they love each other.
I kind of saw it as like maybe a community thing. Like it kind of seems like she's helping him out with the load. Like it's very clear, like very heavy. It's like a burden for him, and she seems to kind of be like helping lift it up so he can stand up. So I saw it as more like a nod to like community, I guess.
It's like she's holding it as he stands up to lift the weight off his shoulders, essentially. Yeah.
I saw that also, and I was also thinking it could be that, or she's like trying to take the flowers.
Okay. Why would you say that? Why do you think she's trying to take the flowers?
She's like holding it, and like he's trying to get up.
Could it be like for him to like easier get up if she holds some of the weight? You know, it's not fully on him.
I can see
that where your head is at because it could be the sense of unity that we are not alone in this situation. It doesn't have to be all on you. We can all form as a community to help get through this idea of the prospecting and the getting. In picking the flowers, showing the sense of unity and community, as M said previously.
I would also like to point out, like, the darker... I mean, it could be depicted as shadows. Like, it's probably shadows. But the flowers that are closer to his head, they're, like, redder. And I guess they're just, like, more vibrant than those at the top. So, like, it could show that his struggles aren't in vain and that he's doing something beautiful and... giving something beautiful back, as well as we all know that red kind of is like blood, so like the red is like, oh, you know, his like pain and his like efforts to do something.
Adding on to that, I keep adding on to stuff, but you know,
no, you're good.
You're good.
I feel like when you look at his pose, it looks like a look of desperation. Like that is something a desperate man would be. Like he's on his knees, you know, his hands are spread apart and he's looking directly at the floor as if he's like given up, and that desperation physically shows on him. I don't know. I can just like see that's like what a desperate man would look like.
And like also adding on to that, like if that were the case, like it's like the woman behind him is telling him like, no, don't give up. Like, you got this. I'll carry these for you so you can stand up, get back on your feet, and continue doing what you want to do.
Which I think is, like, a Latin American thing, you know? There has been a lot much struggling, but it's a community that always tries to help each other and stand up against the struggles that they've faced since, you know, they've been colonized and they've been in extreme poverty, have had standards of living, but they keep helping each other and keep going.
Okay, now we're moving into the film into film with the image that is depicted from a scene from Paul Thomas Anderson's 2007 film There Will Be Blood. It was released on December 6, 2007. The story is about Daniel Plainview, an oil prospector who conned local landowners by getting more land, but a rival Eli Sunday creates tension between the two, causing a feud of a lifetime. This was filmed in the United States, out in Montana or Wyoming. It was filmed besides California. So I view the image as like of the American dream failing. Of the idea of the American dream failing, definitely with the oil industry being such greed within it, and changing a person changing a person when they want something, which I think Paul Thomas Anderson does a lot of within his films, such as The Master, starring Joaquin Phoenix, of showing how the human spirit is decrumbling within ourselves, within society as a whole.
I really like that tone. One other thing I want to add is, I feel like it's a little bit about the American dream. Like, it's sort of like the dream of, like, you come here, and then you, like, strike it rich through some genius, and you manage to pull it off, and, like, you're wealthy, all your family, everything's great for your family. And, like, oil is one of the more classic ways to get rich. And here he is attempting the most classic way to get rich. He is in America, he's an entrepreneur, and he's trying to strike it rich with oil. But he's sort of reaching a roadblock. Like, he's putting all this effort into it. But I think that's his oil mill or something? Oil drill or whatever?
It's an oil drill, yes.
Okay. Like, it's going up in flames. Like, all this effort is just being wasted. Because although the American dream is a promise, it doesn't really give you anything. It just promises that it might be possible. But, like... And also the fact that, like, you never hear about the failures. You only hear about the people who succeed in making it rich. And this is an example of one of those failures.
Mm-hmm. It also reminds me of one of... It reminds me of one of the most famous scenes within the movie when Daniel Day-Lewis' character, Daniel Plainview, actually screams out, "I have abandoned my child," in front of a jury, which that wasn't actually his kid, but he took on as, like, his apprentice, mm-hmm. which symbolizes the way of how much he is willing to give up his own, how much he's willing to give up the idea of community and friendships just in order to succeed and compete with rivals, which has been a common theme within societies.
Wait, is this the movie where there's a bunch of Native women who marry into white families?
No.
Okay, I'm thinking of something else then.
No, I think you're thinking of Killers of the Flower Moon.
I am probably thinking of Killers of the Flower Moon.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he's upset that the oil is burning.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, the anguish in his posture as, like, he watches his world burn. I like that.
That, as he watches his world burn, yeah.
Yes.
I feel like, I don't know, it's, like, very cinematic, you know? It's an explosion, and he's mm-hmm. far away watching it with this look of defeat. You can't see it, but, like, in this posture,
you can imagine it.
You can imagine the look of defeat.
Yeah, definitely with the shadowing of there's hard lighting, but towards the, and, like, the focal point is center, but you can kind of see the darker colors and the softer shadows and, like, the darkness around Daniel Day-Lewis's character within this scene to symbolizes how his world is crumbling down upon himself.
You know, there's, like, that quote where, like, some people will watch the world burn.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he's watching his world burn, you know? He's not frantic or anything or doing anything to try and stop that. He's just accepting that of this destruction that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Is he wearing a corset?
I think that's like a tank.
A vest.
Okay.
Yeah,
like a suit.
Is that his underwear?
No, it's not his underwear.
No. It's his shirt.
Probably the button down.
It's the button down. It's
sagging.
Oh, it's the fact that he's wearing leather, which is usually something that you literally take from killing.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, he's sort of like that whole using every resource available to him, no matter what the cost, to try and succeed. He's even wearing leather, something that you have to kill an animal for, because it gives you very protective clothing.
But the, like, resources, there doesn't seem to be, like, anything else besides that, what is it, oil well?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's empty, you know? There's, like, nothing there.
Maybe it's to, like, symbolize how maybe he's, like, sacrificed everything for this for the American dream, I guess, or, like, mm-hmm. his oil rig.
Sacrificed everything, so now he has nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Now, after the North America, we are now going into South America, starting with our first image, Segunda Familia by Teresa do Amaral, painted in 1933 and set in Brazil in the style of realism.
Are they fleeing famine?
We, you can kind of see that, yes, with the postures of the familia in the train, which I could see as the Latin Latin movement up to capitalistic societies due to the working conditions within there, because
dictators,
yes. South America and Latin America has had a lot of dictators since.
Not only that, but I feel like specifically since it was painted in 1933, that's the like interwar period between World War One and World War Two.
Yes,
dictators.
Yes, so, dictators.
Since this is like in Brazil, I believe back then they also had like a dictator. Mm-hmm. Could be wrong.
But it's also something that's, like, the Latin American community has suffered as a whole is, like, that poverty.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
Along with, like, the extreme poverty that they find. You see, they don't even have shoes. That's, like, like representing that's their day-to-day life as a result of needing these dictators. But also, the title, Segunda Familia.
Yeah, like...
Is it his second family? Like...
Yeah.
I feel like when you say...
It's the second class in the background. Sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay.
Yeah, that's a good...
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
You're observant as hell.
Yeah, because, like, based on the title, Segunda Family would be, like, Segunda Familia is, like, your second family. So is this a man's hidden love affair family?
Yeah, it could be. It could be, because... Because I know that Latin America is very into the idea of Christianity, but also it wouldn't be shocking if the people in charge also had second families because of the time period of human lust. Mm-hmm. And I also can this thing within the train of like, it's just dark. Just no light. It looks something that's like a shadow almost. It kind of makes me think, is the train basically the unknown? The unknown of immigration? Or
I think it might be, you know, because mm-hmm. you see like a mother with her child there. There's always like the idea that a parent will leave into the unknown to make a better life for their child, mm-hmm. which is much of the immigration story.
It's also about they're being left behind. Like, it looks sort of like the family is leaving the train, but they left behind the weakest. The mm-hmm. old man and the baby. So, like, maybe they've abandoned them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Survival of the fittest.
Mm-hmm. I kind of saw it as, like, there's three windows in the background, and the farthest on the left has, like, a mother and a child, and then the middle is, like, an old man by himself, and then the one on the, like, far right is empty. I kind of saw it as, like, a progression through time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, in this photo, like, overall, it kind of depicts, like, the, you know, the poverty, their bare feet, their gaunt faces. So I kind of saw it as, like, if they continue like this, like, there's not going to be anyone left. Like, their society is going to collapse.
Their faces kind of freak me out.
So scary.
It's very...
Would you say that's, like, a deliberate, like, yeah. choice by
artistic choice?
Yeah, yeah, I think, like, they're made to like, barely resemble humans, like, how they were treated. They weren't.
Yeah.
Maybe like how tired they are.
Like there's a sense of distortion in their face.
Mm-hmm.
Especially like the youngest one you see right in the middle.
Yeah, he looks like an alien.
Okay.
Yes, he does. Oh, those five faces are disaligned because like they're all like knocked off center. Like
yeah.
everyone's leaning one way or the other.
It's called Uncanny Valley when it looks like just close enough or whatever, but it's like
yeah.
off.
Mm-hmm. Oh, close. That's a skinwalker.
Oh,
never mind.
Oh.
No, I'm just like, no,
because the Uncanny Valley is like where it resembles humanness, but there's just something slightly off about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. They're all like missing eyebrows.
Is that what's bothering you?
The ability to express like their protests, like they've
uh-huh.
been silenced. Like how you use your eyebrows to like, express emotions. Their protests have been silenced because they're a second class family.
Mm-hmm. This can also kind of show how families in this situation were very malnourished due to the society down in South America as well.
Yeah, you can see the malnourishment in the little girl, the pink one, her legs. Like
yeah.
Her legs.
Mm-hmm. Oh dear. What the hell?
They're like bowed and everything.
It's very sad. Okay, now we're going into a Argentinian painting called First Step by Antonio Berni, painted in 1936, and is part of the Surrealism and Realism. I kind of see it as like a dual reality almost of a dream that a young woman wants to have, but they are, but life takes a toll on them that they have to be more conformed into societal acceptable idea with the woman sewing what looks like to be a dress of a dream that she once had but now can't with the sadness of her expression.
I see it as like a mother wishing to like support her child with her dream, like not the alternate realities, but like as a person who was previously a dancer, like my mom used to make my like costumes and stuff, and my grandma would also like go in and do stuff for me, so I feel like it shows how there's that, like, I guess motherly love that mm-hmm. the mother wants her child to be successful, mm-hmm. wants her child to be happy and live her dreams, which is why she is sewing this dress or costume or whatever while her child essentially practices and shows her, like, oh, look at what I can do. Look at what I'm capable of.
Mm-hmm. I kind of see it similar to that. Like, it's the setting is in a house, but there's also, like, the windows and the doors are wide open that we can see the outside. Like, there's emphasis on the outside that's being, like, closed off by the home. So I kind of see it as, like, the mother's, like, working to shelter, like, I guess her daughter's dream almost. Like, she's working to keep it, I guess, safe. I don't know.
Safe from the outside world.
Yeah. Or, like, alive even.
What do you think?
I don't know if it's because the picture is bad quality in this one, but it looks like in their right hand they're holding, like, a wand, and they might be trying to attack or something.
It's okay. It's okay. It's a very bad quality picture. My bad.
In what hand?
This one.
Like it's sort of like the window sort of looks like it's part of her hand in that image.
It looks kind of like a magician almost.
Yeah.
The mother looks like that one, like, fairy godmother from Shrek.
Oh!
Iconic. Shrek 2 is the best Shrek movie.
You know, when I first saw this, that's kind of decisive. I thought the kid looked like a jester, you know?
She does. Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
She's, like, entertaining her mother.
I thought she was, like, trying to attack.
Okay.
That could just be the quality of the picture.
Oh, one other thing, though, is that their ceilings are unfinished. And I feel like you can see the boards. I feel like that mm-hmm. sort of, like...
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I wouldn't say that the ceilings are unfinished. I think it's just... It's a very cultural aspect. Mm-hmm. Like, you go to anywhere in Southern Latin America, mm-hmm. you go even to Puerto Rico or Cuba, you will see...
No, porque no en Salvador es así también.
Yeah, like so, like, too. In, like, mm-hmm. for example, one of my friends, she... her house is in the old San Juan, so the architecture is still the same mm-hmm. as it was back in the 1700s. Mm-hmm. And those ceilings where you only see the beams, those actually were used to, like, show status, because mm-hmm. you were able to have, like, those high ceilings, and you were able to show, like, oh, look, this is real wood. Like, we are using, like, the best materials for my home. So mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it's, like, unfinished ceilings. I would say it was just, like... It was just depicting the architecture of Argentina in that time.
It's kind of fascinating that there's cultural differences about how ceilings look. But at least they don't have popcorn ceilings.
Would you prefer, like, tin ceilings? Because I know, like, in El Salvador, much of, like, the, like, small villages or anything like that, their houses are made out of, like, scrap metal.
Yeah.
Like, it's, like, almost pieced together, made out of trash. And it's a very...
I think it also, like, shows the economic disparities, because, like, in Puerto Rico, it's the same. Like, you go to the countryside, mm-hmm. you will see the scrap metal houses, like, in the mountains. You'll be like, oh, that looks abandoned. No! There's a dog right there playing with this little owner. So it's just, I think it's just a very cultural thing, I mm-hmm. suppose.
Okay, now we're going to be looking at the Dancing in Colombia by Fernando Botero. painted in 1980, and it's set in Colombia. What do you guys think of the way of the instruments in the man and the woman dancing, sort of the salsa? Or
they remind me of. If anyone has seen Wreck-It Ralph,
yes,
the people from like Wreck-It Ralph's game, like the villagers, they kind of remind
me of Felix Jr.
Yeah,
notice that instruments don't have strings.
Mm-hmm. Why? Like, why do you think that? Why do you important?
Think that was an artistic choice?
To not make noise from the instruments.
Okay.
This kind of reminds me of a wedding. Actually, or like a nightclub.
No, because yeah, looking, I just saw at the bottom there's like cigarettes or like thrown cigarettes buds or something.
I mean, there's little apples. I assume those are culturally significant, but I don't know the context for them. Like, I assume it's like part of like some sort of like, I think they're there for a reason. Like, maybe there's like some sort of thing you're supposed to do with them, but I don't have the context for them.
I've never heard of Colombian apples on the ground.
No, me either. But it does kind of remind me a little bit of sort of the Roaring Twenties and how
they're staring at me. People are staring at me.
Their staring is so weird. Like, there's like no thoughts behind their eyes or something. It's just like, I know,
different directions.
I know.
Wait, maybe the band just like stare at us with like sightless and not very nerving, because the band never gets credit for anything usually when it comes to weddings, because it's always focused upon the bride and the groom, and you don't really thank the people that attend the venue and like work there to like make it the best possible experience that a person can have as well.
There's just a sense of emotionalness behind those eyes.
Yeah.
No single thoughts behind those eyes.
No.
Or
me in math class.
maybe these emotionless eyes can also represent the idea of failed marriage, that they know this marriage isn't going to last, so don't get their hopes up too high.
I don't think this is a wedding, because I've noticed in a corner that there's like one of those radio machines. It might be like a club or something.
It could be a club.
Jukebox.
Jukebox.
The title, like Dancing in Colombia, makes it sound like they're not from Colombia, so it kind of gives like maybe they're tourists and they're there, like the two people dancing, and so the people in the club in the background are probably
these weirdos.
Yeah, they're like Colombian, they're like judging them hardcore, so that's why they're like
yeah
behind the eyes.
Yeah, from what I hear, people who are not from the country, a lot of people do kind of judge them because they don't really appreciate it. While they appreciate just the experience, they don't appreciate the whole entire culture the country has to offer.
Well, I just found out, apparently the artist is just really into drawing fruit.
It's more like his artistical signature.
Because
like, you know, Van Gogh, like, he wanted his brush strokes to be seen. Well, maybe this guy just wants his apples to be seen.
Okay, now we're going into the sort of theatrical mask of Peru, which I could not find what it was, but these are considered traditional masks of experimental theater. And some of them kind of look like characters from Five Nights at Freddy's.
I was gonna say some of them look like the movie Cats. Like,
yes.
The one at the top.
Oh, that's insulting to the masks.
Well, Cats did pretty well on Broadway. It just didn't do well in theaters.
I think it's James Corden's fault. And Jason Derulo. Like, what are you doing there? Anyways, I feel like from my background, I see those masks and I immediately think of like the vejigantes that we have in Puerto Rico, and essentially those were like from, like, we all know that Latin America was just like the intermingling of like so many cultures because of not only the Spaniards but also the African slaves that they brought over, as well as the indigenous peoples that lived there. So in Puerto Rico's case, specifically, the vejigantes are they're meant to symbolize like the devils, like demons. So people dress up as demons and sort of like scare the bad luck away. And it's just like, we have so many cultural events and parties and like just things that happen. And I'm just like, mainly towards the new year, because like for the new year, you kind of want to like scare the bad luck away and like start the new year off with like a good foot, like on a good foot. But like, yeah, I get reminded of like that cultural aspect of the Vejigantes.
That's what I was thinking as well when I chose this image of like cultural tradition of like scaring the spirits away, or it can also be used for like health of like you can use them as like you're willing to get rid of the evil within your town by wearing these masks and performing these traditions. There's a better word, but I can't think of it right at the moment. But they would use these for scaring away bad spirits, or use them even for sacrifices in some cultures as well.
Yeah, especially because the program had, like, the Incans, right? And they were, like, very much sacrificial and all of that.
Now we're moving on to Europe. And the first image is a still from the movie Amire, directed by Jean-Pierre Ohunet, released on February 8, 2002. The story is about a young woman, Amile, who orchestrates the lives of the people around her. And it was filmed in France around the Paris area, and the film is completely spoken in French. The lighting and the set design really feels sort of grand, of a woman who wants to fix everything and orchestrates everything into like perfection, like giving more life into life, almost. Definitely with the blue lamp and like the red and the orange around her, including staring into the camera with a paper and scissors, which kind of reminds me of Wes Anderson movies as well, for being kind of like a children's book, almost.
I was going to say it looks like, you know, like in the synopsis you gave, it was like she orchestrates the lives of the people around her. The image looks like very photoshopped. Like, it looks like things don't go together. So I was kind of thinking that like maybe that was a homage to the, I guess, story of the show.
It kind of also reminds me of the idea of a scrapbook people make, of like, they have one thing of here and then take another thing of here, and then they mash it together. And it's also the same within art and coming up with stories, because there's this theory that creativity is dead. And you usually take one thing, you take something from this story and then another thing from that story and make it something new as well.
I just think it's very whimsy.
Very whimsical.
It's, yeah.
I think it looks like he's doing homework or something.
She.
See.
Like you watched the movie, presumably. Like, what is?
No, I haven't. I haven't.
So we're all just guessing what the paper means, because like she's
exactly.
Okay. If she's holding up the paper, should we hop on Reddit and see what people say?
But like her finger's kind of cut off, so I assume she's gonna like you know how everything was super scrapbooked. Maybe like her powers or something, or like she's able to cut up things and put them back together and like force the world to like work around that. So if that's the case, maybe she's trying to like manipulate the paper.
So here, someone on Reddit says that it is one of their absolute favorite movies, and that it's so charming and quirky, with so many memorable characters that you can't help but liking.
It's kind of like the Barbie movie.
Yeah, and they say that in a way it also feels like a love letter to society's outcasts and misfits, about how it's okay and even good to be different and to dare to be yourself and not just following the stream.
Okay, now we're going on to the image of Consolation by Theodoros Yersakis, painted in 1847 and set in Europe, presumably Greece, because it was a Greek person
who painted it.
Yes.
It looks like they have fancy clothes on.
Oh my god. Why would you say that?
It looks fancy.
Because it looks... Why do you think that's, like, a deliberate artistical choice?
The people might have, like, money to get fancy stuff.
This picture also kind of reminds me of Turkish, of the Turkish clothing. And when I first looked at this image, I thought they could be sort of Orthodoxy nuns, similar to Orthodoxy nuns, actually, with the way they are dressed, and, like, the consolation, because of people feel so many things, and around this time, Europe was in war, because you had the Kingdom of Two Italies at war, and you had the Ottoman Empire, mm-hmm. and you also had the British and the French, not liking each other. So it makes me think of, like, the consolation of people in a time of need are gonna be there for people. But that could be my optimistic self.
It looks very, like, the lady's very, like, consolidating her, and she's being there for her, and she's trying to give comfort. No, that almost looks like a mother, you know, how she gives comfort and consolidates you through your struggles.
Mm-hmm. Motherly love.
Motherly love, yeah.
I went a little opposite direction. You can see the town in the background of them, and this is, like, it seems like the land is very destitute to everything. I, like, viewed it as they're, like, being cast out, because you can see in the image that they don't, like, they're clearly not dressed to travel. They're in very wealthy-looking attire, like nobles. They don't seem like they're carrying any, like, water or anything like that. And the only other person in the image, besides what I presume is mother and daughter, is a shepherd in the background. And the shepherd is not looking at him. Like, he's sort of, mm-hmm. sort of, like, being rejected from society.
It can also be the idea of shunning. Mm-hmm. Shunning people out for their differences as well. Like, society has done before. Definitely with the idea of women being witches, mm-hmm. as well. Which was very prevalent back in the 16, 1700s in... possibly 1800s as well. Now we are looking, now the next image is by an Italian painter, Caravaggio, The Card Ships, painted between the year 1590 to 1594. It is set in Italy, and they are playing Primero, an early iteration of poker.
This dude is cheating, I think. Right? He's putting, like, a card in his belt or whatever. Or his pants. Like, there's cards in his pants.
Yeah.
That's literally what it says.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and the other dude is looking over the boy in black's shoulder. Mm-hmm. And, like, there's the fact that, like, the boy in black, he looks very youthful. He looks like he's getting scammed by, like, these older, yeah. more experienced people around him.
He's, like, the guy's looking over his shoulder, and he has kind of, like...
He's kind of, like, looking at, like, his cards and, like... is telling the other, like,
yeah, exactly.
This is what mm-hmm. he has, you know.
They're a team.
What do you think?
They're playing a card game, and
we've already stated that.
Two of them are cheating.
There's not much more to go off.
It's really just like, don't cheat, you guys. That's not good.
Or do cheat, like.
If you can take advantage of people, do it.
Yeah. Manipulation.
One thing, though. The innocent-looking boy is dressed in black, a color often associated with manipulation, despite the fact that he looks very innocent and he's being scammed. So maybe the fact that certain people are assigned manipulative roles, even if they don't live up to it, like, they're just assumed to be manipulative.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. This one's a very sad and dark one. The image is Stanchik by Jan Matejko, painted in 1862, set in Poland during the time of the Russo-Polish War. The war was between Russia and Poland because of the fight for Polish independence, and Stanchik was a court jester for Alexander Sigismund and Sigmund Augustus. And I see it as, like, a jester being supposed to be happy, but with all the violence of Fight for Independence, this jester can't put on a show. He can't put on a show because of the bleakness surrounding him, with the drapes being black around him wearing a red court jester outfit that can symbolize the blood of many, many people for the fight of Polish independence.
Furthermore, he's sitting, his chair kind of looks like a throne. So I thought it was like they're calling the king who, like, the king of Russia, who, like, necessitated this rebellion, sort of like a fool.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, he's also, he kind of looks like Satan.
Yeah, like, he does.
It would just end, like, so, like, you're calling him both, like, a fool, and they're also talking about, like, the violence and, like, the fact that sensible people are creating all this evil in the world. Mm-hmm.
Because Poland has experienced a lot, even with war, after their independence. Because you have World War I, and then you have the invasion of Poland in 1939 as well. The start of World War II, and how the Polish have to fight for their independence all the time. That they are always within the state of war, that they can never find inner peace, which I can see Stanishek symbolizing as a motif within this.
He's supposedly a real person.
Yeah, he is a real person.
Also, there's, like, a party to the right of him.
Yeah, I see, like, someone standing in the background.
Yeah, there's, like, multiple people in the background. They're, like, enjoying their time while there's, like, you know, war and everything outside. And they're, like, their little castle.
Sort of like War and Peace, actually, and how the aristocrats never respond to war. But it's always the people who are not aristocrats are usually the ones that suffer the most.
Do you see that table? Like, there's a letter right there. Could it possibly be, like, he's feeling that way because of what he's read?
Oh, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah.
Like, what if he had, like, some horrible information? Because he was an intelligent man, and he was he was thought to come from a noble family.
Mm-hmm.
Well read, well immersed, and he's supposed to be out on a party, but instead he's sitting by himself with this open letter.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a bed.
I thought that was a bed, too.
It might be a bed.
It might be.
Might be bed, but, you know, there's that paper there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if it is a bed, then it's just talking about how it's utterly consumed this king's life, that his paperwork has even, like, come to him when he sleeps.
No, but I found a better picture that's, there's, like, a crumbled piece of paper. Like, he's crumbled partly of the paper of the letter. So it could also be something like that that's, like, completely put him into utter agony.
Like, news from the war, because it almost looks like a newspaper.
I did find a better picture.
You're the superior picture finders.
This one's on Reddit, so. I've never spent so much time on Reddit before.
I don't know, this is an eerie picture. There's something about, like...
Oh, there's, like, it looks like Satan.
Yeah. Guys, there's like a midget in the is that offensive? Should I say that? I probably shouldn't say that.
Little people.
A little person, carrying something. Just put that out there.
There was a video I watched about, like, this painting, because, like, I like art, and sometimes I'll just watch, like, videos of paintings.
Conservation paintings.
I love those. Okay, moving on. Sorry. There's something that a video by the canvas where it was like how do you say his name?
Stanishek.
Or the sad clown paradox, and it's like explaining the painting and the composition and how it separates the subject from the rest of the party. I think it's a really cool video that I suggest you should watch. It's really cool.
Oh, send me the link after this.
Okay, I'll send you the link.
Now, we are going into Africa with our first image being Houses by Jamila Burahimo, painted in 1975, set in Nigeria. I think this representation of a house shows the diversity of Nigeria as a whole, because I know from an AP comparative government class I was in, they would talk about the diversity of how Nigeria is, like, considered one of the most diverse regions in Africa, and how it culturally blends together with more than 40 languages as well. and how the painting can symbolize that as well, with the massive colors.
It looks like a mesh of colors, you know? There's mm-hmm. not, like, a certain pattern or, like, a mm-hmm. thing is painted one way. It looks like it's just a lot of different colors.
And also, like, combine that with, like, the harsh lines, maybe it's talking about how, like, when the borders were sent after, like, the colonial powers left, it's sort of like the contrasting of the very, like, straight, very straightforward and, like, very inorganic borders mm-hmm. with, like, the very, like much more fluid cultures that lived inside those borders.
All right. All right. Now we're going into the Ani's Judgment, Book of the Dead, Papyrus of Ani, painted in 1250 BC in ancient Egypt. And this is depicting the Egypt version of the afterlife. It's a pretty famous picture.
All the documentaries I've watched about ancient Egypt have prepared me for this
moment. Speak now!
I'm not gonna say much. Little background. We all know the ancient Egyptians mummified and, like, put their dead people in caskets, right? Yeah. But sometimes they didn't care if you got lost in the afterlife because the journey was, like, really long and, like, very arduous. But, you know, if you were of importance...
Screw you.
No. They actually wanted you to get to the afterlife.
Oh, yay.
So they kind of just, like... wrote down, like, here, you gotta go to this bridge over here, and you gotta go to this mountain, and you gotta meet with this god. And then they're gonna weigh your heart, because, like, if not, you can't go yeah. and be happy forever.
Talking about the...
You saw that in Moon Knight?
Yeah, I was gonna say...
Moon Knight?
Yeah.
It's a Marvel TV show.
Okay.
Also, notice, like, on the left, one of the girls are white.
Yeah, I saw that. Very odd, you know, it's the only lighter skinned
person. Anyways, guys, the jackal, Anubis, the god of the dead.
Mm-hmm. A lot of times in Egyptian, like, hieroglyphics and everything, didn't a lot of times they not draw people's skin tones as they actually were, but instead, like, they had, like, a symbolism for the colors, I remember. I think there is, like, a lot of times they end up doing people green and stuff, because I feel like a lot of times the color palette is mm-hmm. less, like, literal and more, like, symbolic. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now we are going into For Maria, Ibn Pataki, directed by Damilia Orjimani, filmed in Nigeria's Nollywood, similar to Hollywood in California, LA, released in November 3rd, 2020, during the midst of the pandemic. The story is about a mother who struggles with postpartum depression after her complicated delivery to her newborn child. I really see this, surrealness, absurdist view of motherhood within the poster itself, with a woman being sort of shadowy and dusty, while the tree has a teddy bear that you would give an infant child, and how the mother and the bear correlate with each other, just staring at each other, and, like, a different power dynamic, because a lot of people who are parents have this inner struggle. It's this insecurity of parenthood, which happens to a lot of people when they are expecting a child, including after they had the child. It just makes them feel like, are they going to be a good parent? Are they not going to be a good parent?
It's not that the baby and the stuffed toy are, like, they're present, they're very physically there, but the presumably the mother is very faded away. Mm-hmm. I believe that shows a lot about how, like, because she's a mother, she prioritizes her children very highly. Mm-hmm. And so, like, for, like, a long time, like, her children matter more to her than she does to herself. Mm-hmm. Which probably ties into the depression, because she doesn't value herself high enough.
I was gonna say, it's like she's being almost erased, you know? Mm-hmm. Talking about, like, the stereotypes or, like, the expectations of women, they're meant to be mothers. They're mothers first, mothers before anything else. And it feels like without this, you know, child that she's like, spent 9 months getting ready to prepare for and raising. She's been building that identity of becoming a mother. She no longer has that, and then her identity that was based on this perception of her being a mother is no longer there. Erasing, like, maybe her own identity.
Yeah, kind of going off, like, the identity pieces, I see, like, because trees are, like, pretty symbolic of, like, you know, life or whatever. And so this tree is, like, bare. Like, there's no new leaves. The only thing on it is the teddy bear, which is, like, the connection to the newborn child. So I kind of see it as, like, now that the child is here, she doesn't have a life outside of her child. Or, like, that's what she kind of feels like. I don't know.
Did her child die, or is just...
I think it's just
after...
postpartum depression.
It's
like after
postpartum.
You have, yeah, so, like, after mm-hmm. you have birth.
Many females feel that a lot.
Postpartum.
Mm-hmm.
That's such a complicated thing to deal with.
It is. Then now, we'll be looking at Spears and Shields by Martin Bulina, created in the late 20th century or early 21st century. A painting from South Africa. This, I believe, is the most cultural thing that we see most of all as being from the United States, of how Africa is depicted.
Isn't South Africa with, like, a lot of white people?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, yeah, they had, like, mm-hmm. a whole... Like, they had segregation on steroids over there.
Yeah.
And this is, like, the fact that this piece is, you know, still very... Is it ethnic or, like, showing their heritage?
Diverse heritage.
Despite the segregation that they've faced. Didn't they segregate Nelson Mandela there?
Yeah.
It was really bad.
Mm-hmm.
That's
crazy.
Do you
guys know who's from South Africa?
No.
Hit singer Tyla. Love her music. She's awesome.
Hmm.
I have a movie recommendation for y'all. It's called Color of Friendship. It's about this white South African girl who is sent, she like is a transfer student to America, and she is placed with a black family. And yeah, and like South Africa is very, like, very big on segregation, and it goes into a lot of, like,
mm-hmm.
Like unordained racism and things like that. Like, one of the first things that happens to her is she is legitimately so terrified for her life that she's placed in this black family that she locks herself in the bathroom. And it goes specifically how, in a lot of times, oppression is built from fear, because, and that fear can only be that fear can only fester because they are separated from the people they fear, and so they're able to, like, build up a more monstrous form of them in their heads,
and they're never able to, like, overcome it.
Mm-hmm. You can see it's like a bit of, like, the you know how they have a tradition in Africa where they
mm-hmm.
use those, like, gold things to, like, elongate
mm-hmm.
their neck, elongate their ears. You can see that they have, like, elongated ears almost.
Mm-hmm.
For, like, really, they're trying to depict their culture really into it with little subtle things.
The three people in the middle, too, are, like, holding hands, so I kind of saw it as, like, maybe unity. Like, they're
coming
together.
Oh my gosh,
they're
besties.
Okay, now we're moving on to the Asian portion of it. Of this podcast, and the first picture is so surreal. It's so hypnotic. It
looks like a dream, kind of like a, you
know,
it looks
yes. like a picture
off the James Webb Telescope.
It looks kind of like a city to me.
It looks
it,
like an explosion.
It is, and it's called the Infinity Mirror Room: Fireflies on Water by Yahui Kazuma. Is a Japanese artist, and it was created, an immersive artwork created in 2002. First of all, this looks like a dream that I would walk into and feel kind of in a daze, that I would walk there for so many hours, that it feels so hypnotic, but also so much in awe, which is so bliss.
Wait, is that the Hirschhorn?
Oh, it changes colors.
Oh.
That would be just amazing to be in and just see it in human.
Look at that, it changes colors.
That is awesome.
I feel like the color change adds, like, a different sentiment, you know?
Yeah.
It's still very dreamy, but, like, that looks more like of a romantic, more
it's
slow
like
dream.
Yeah.
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 So this is in D.C., we can literally take a little wheelchair, hop in the car,
It's so whimsical. It feels like almost Peter Pan's Neverland, almost.
Well, it looks like, space, like stars in space.
Yes.
It's all infinite, too. So you're there, and it just kind of seems like the moment could last forever.
And it's endless.
Yeah.
It all seems very geometric. Like, you can see, like, they sort of, like, are organized in squares.
Yeah.
That makes art come to life.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. They have, like, a purple version, too, which gives, like, more of his, like, what is it, like, a fan... What is it? A fantasy garden or something like that?
Yeah.
Fantasy forest?
Uh-huh.
I feel like that the color change is, like,
that'd be
an
so
intentional
cool.
I feel like
part of it.
It's a place you go to, like, you know, when you're, like, in a dream and, like, you gotta, like, travel through worlds. It's, like, the place you kind of, like, walk through.
Yes.
In between.
Yeah.
If you were to run in here, would you, like, smack into in the mirror so you guys hear me?
Maybe.
Like, if we were to go right now, would you do that?
Would you smack into the mirror?
Oh, he would.
You have to get tickets and it's all booked out for the rest of the month.
Ah, dang.
Understandable, I guess. It looks really cool.
It's kind of like the Air and Space Museum.
Yes.
You know what it reminds me of, too? It reminds me of, like, the scene from, what is it called? Tangled, where the, like, lamp.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now I'm thinking of the music playing as I see this. You know, if I go, I might have to play the music while I'm there.
So now our next image is from December 8th, 2023. It just recently won Best Animated Feature at the Academy Awards, The Boy and the Heroine, directed by Hajua Miyazaki, and it was released in December 8th of 2023. And it's a story of a 12-year-old boy named Mahito struggles to settle in a town after his mother died. But a talking heroine tells Mahito his mother is still alive, so he goes on an adventure to look for his mother in another world, and it's actually set in Japan.
Oh, so it's all like familial duty to like your parents and everything?
Yeah, and I think the heroine is more, because I feel like the inclusion of the heroine represents more as a guide towards like into the unknown, or like the idea of spirituality is within the family dynamic of how there's this old saying that a mother knows her child because they can hear their heartbeat when they are born. Mm-hmm. And I kind of view the heroine as that the way that the idea of depression just alleviating in the glances of hope with similarity to the dove.
So I actually saw this movie.
My gosh, you told me.
Yeah. This was the one where it was like there was the glitch at the end of the movie. Anyway. Yeah. So like this scene is like, so this is his like great uncle or whatever, and this like is the world he's built from like the ground up, except now it's like falling apart because it's like it's unstable, it's falling apart, there's imperfection. And so this little boy, he's like suffered a lot of loss in his life. He lost his mother, there was a war, he had to relocate, he has like a new mother now, so he's had like a lot of like conflict and stuff. And so like this whole scene is like him being offered the choice to like make a perfect world that would have none of that. He ultimately like refuses, though, like spoilers, but like but like yeah.
Anyways, I would like to point out, you guys know like Edward from Twilight, Robert Pattinson. He was in the movie. Like,
oh,
you can't,
wait,
like,
really?
Yeah, he was one of the voices. I think he was the voice of the heron.
Yeah,
can't,
and Christian Bale was in it as well.
You don't even realize it's him because he did such a good job. Like, Florence Pugh was in it as well. Like,
oh,
the cast.
God.
Yeah,
the
English
cast
version.
Was amazing in the English version. Like, I want to watch it so bad, but I can't because it's not in theaters anymore.
Robert Pattinson also played Batman, who also lost his mother.
Oh.
Illusion. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like he does very well with pathetic characters.
No, I really want to watch that movie. I haven't.
Yeah, me too.
I watched
that. It was a really good movie.
No, it's cool. I watched another movie by Studio Ghibli, which was like, it's called The Grave of the Fireflies, and it is one of the most saddest.
I haven't watched it yet, but I want to.
Oh, it's so
I
sad.
I love Studio Ghibli. Like, I find myself crying at least every single movie.
Yes, I was crying. They have a very, like, they have a way of bringing out, like, very intimate and intricate emotions of, like, somebody. Like, I remember that movie genuinely made me bawl my eyes out, and I had to, like, just sit there and contemplate everything that I saw.
Oh my gosh, you know what movie made me feel that? Like, How to Train Your Dragon 2? I'm not gonna emphasize, but How to Train Your Dragon 2
So sad. Not related at all in any way, shape, or form. I just thought I should mention that.
It's a good comparison.
How to Train Your Dragon 2 broke me.
Is that the one with his mom in it?
Yeah.
Yes.
And the one where his dad dies. Spoiler.
I was not aware of that.
Well, it came out in 2014, so yeah, it's not really a spoiler anymore. Mm-hmm. Okay, now we're onto the Hamsa Damayanti by Laha Ravi Rama, painted in 1899, and it's set in India. This image kind of symbolizes, I think, inner peace in sort of the spirituality of Hinduism, of Hindi and Hare Krishna. In Hare Krishna, with the dove and the symbolism of the female looking to the dove for inspiration, for inner peace within India, which was at the time, I believe, getting conquered by Great Britain as being a colony.
Mm-hmm. I saw it like she's looking at a swan, and swans are known for like their beauty or whatever.
Yeah.
So I kind of saw it as like.
No, she's the fairest in the land.
Yeah, she was looking to it for, like admiring its beauty and stuff.
No, because the color schemes is also, like, this really romanticism. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. It reminds me of romanticism. Yeah. Where
uh-huh.
It's, like, very...
The romance period.
Mm-hmm, like, very picturesque, mm-hmm. kind of, like, fantasy-like
mm-hmm.
color
mm-hmm.
background. I'm not even yapping about.
I thought that was, like, that one goose that lays the golden egg. Because that was, like, goat on it.
And then, like, the prosperity of her clothes, like, this is very, mm-hmm. very clearly, like, a wealthy woman, and, like, mm-hmm. this is a wealthy house.
Also, like, I don't know if you guys know this, but it's very sad about, like, swans, like, when they meet their, like, mate, they kind of, like, stay with them for life,
mm-hmm.
and when their, like, mate dies, they get, like, eternally depressed. So I feel like the fact that we only see one swan, and she's also alone...
It makes it depressed.
Also kind of, like, shows how, like, maybe either she hasn't found her love yet and mm-hmm. she's just, like, optimistic and wishing and searching for her love, or she's already lost her love and is, you know...
Maybe she's finding kind of, like, she's, like, relating to this one and whatever.
Yeah. Also, Swan Lake is such a good ballet. Mm-hmm. It's a classic.
It is, and that kind of reminds me, in going off Swan Lake, I do recommend Black Swan as well.
Oh, the new movie?
The movie about ballet.
With, like,
Natalie Portman.
Where she turns into the swan.
Yeah.
I'll send you the link later.
Okay.
One other thing present in the image, though, is that it's sort of like the juxtaposition. No, you know what I'm trying to say.
Juxtaposition
of the two worlds. Like, there's this girl who's like in like very finely made clothes, who's on marble, and then there's the swan who is standing on nature, and like the sort of like when natural world and the human world come together and create beauty because they can be at peace.
Okay, now we're on to our final image of Asia, the Terracotta Army, set in ancient China, and sculpted date unknown. However, it is presumed to have been sculpted around 221 BC. Okay, now let's look at Australia, aka the Oceania region of the world. First off, we are going to look at from a still image from... You guessed it, The Hobbit, part of the Lord of the Rings franchise, directed by Peter Jackson, filmed in New Zealand. A story about Bilbo Baggins' adventures on helping dwarves take back the Kingdom of Erebor. And it was released December 6, 2012. The still image kind of represents this guy wanting to go on an adventure. Even though hobbits are known to be non- wanting to do stuff, they just like being to themselves. They're like a lot of introverts, but Bilbo decided to go on a mission after so many dwarves, and Gandalf showed up to his door basically saying, "Let us in and we're gonna just throw a massive party," and he's like, I don't know, I'm a hobbit, I don't want to do anything.
No, what it reminds me of Alice in Wonderland. Like,
exactly.
The background of it and all that, and then the fact that they want to go on an adventure or something.
Yeah. Was this a thermometer? I mean, is this a thermostat?
I have no idea.
I don't know.
Me either.
I know what you're yelling at.
The guy in the picture kind of looks like Willy Wonka to me.
Oh, he does.
J.R.R. Tolkien.
Sort of has that feeling of like childhood innocence, like everything is right in the world, everything's great, but he's also running away from it, which I think sort of symbolizes how, like, as he goes on this journey, he gives up this peaceful, idyllic life, but he has to do that to save that life for everyone else.
Exactly.
Oh, I thought like he was violently like running towards the camera.
Well, that might be what Peter Jackson's stage directions were, but
run violently towards the camera.
But Bilbo wants to go on, because the movie, the first movie of The Hobbit, is called An Unexpected Journey, which adds more meaning into Bilbo's running towards adventure, because Bag End is known for being dull. They're just calm. They just want to have unity. But there's an adventure of going to Erebor, because it's ruled by Smaug, a fire-breathing dragon, who basically rules over where the dwarves
were. Whoa. We went to whatever a hobbit is, and a dwarf, or what are they? Little men?
Dwarves, yes.
Dwarves to a fire-breathing dragon.
Yeah, the Lord of the Rings franchise is pretty...
Do you, Vervix?
No, I do not. Have you, Vervix? No, I have not.
When will you, Vervix?
Never.
Shrug.
Do you think if we turned off the lights, anyone would notice we're back here?
There is a clear window.
I'm just saying. We're capable of finding.
What about the next painting? Look at it.
All right. The next painting is the car Bracks? By John Brack.
They're driving through the abandoned. Like, you know when they're driving through the abandoned?
Oh, okay. Say that again louder.
Oh.
Do
you
the
need
Lorax.
To introduce it first? I don't know.
Yeah. The next image is The Car by John Brack, set in Australia, painted in 1899.
All right. I said it was giving, like, the Lorax when they're driving through, like, the chopped down forest. Like, the family's in the car, and they're driving through, and, like, you can see in the background here, it's, like, dead. Like, I can't tell if those are, like, and they look like tombstones or crosses, but, like, I can't tell from this image quality. Or if they're, like, trees or not. And the faces look very, like, creepy, like...
What is it with the theme of creepy faces? Like, it really freaks me out.
Someone said it. Like, one lady's smiling, but, like, in a very...
Kind of jokery. Manner.
Yeah, and yeah, the children are very blank-faced.
I think it's, like, sort of... She looks sort of pained. Like, they have the desolated forest. And, like, the father, he can do nothing but drive them away and, like, help them escape it. But because he's doing that, it, like, leaves the children and the mother sort of time to mourn. And it looks like there's something coming out of her eye. It looks like there's maybe a tear. Yeah. Of, like, they're watching their home be destroyed and, like, they have to flee from it.
Mm-hmm. Because Australia was first built to be an imprisonment island for prisoners.
A penal colony,
yes. And in a lot of their preceding descendants are from that. And Australia is known for its wildlife beauty, as the car ride can symbolize the adventure, but it can also be commentary on how automobiles are becoming more polluted towards the world and the world's ecosystem. Okay, the next image is called Metropolis by Rosalie Gashini, set in Australia and sculpted in Australia. It's
a sculpture?
Yeah, it is.
It's road signs.
Yeah.
It is.
Oh, it might be?
Like actual road signs.
Yeah,
sides.
Like road
signs.
It is.
Yes. And dead zone, all that. Dead end and everything.
Dead zone.
I see, like, all these signs and, like, it's talking about it. Is Metropolis, like, a city?
Yeah, Metropolis is a big city.
Yeah, like, I see all these signs and, like, how all of them are kind of, like, overwhelming in a picture. Could it represent, like, how some people might be overwhelmed by seeing, like, all this stuff?
It is very overwhelming. It's very, like, in your face.
Yeah, it's sort of like how cities a lot of them center around cars, and those, like, the whole traffic and everything, like, everything is so, like, everybody is so crammed together that you can't even, like, see yourself from the people around you.
Or, like, in cities, not even, like, in cars. Like, I know if you go, like, to New York or something, like, it's so suffocating that there's, like, so many people around.
Definitely Manhattan. Mm-hmm. Definitely Manhattan and Brooklyn.
Yeah.
New York.
New York.
New York. Yeah, yeah, kind of.
Ham and cheese on a roll with an orange drink. If you know, you know. Yeah, thank you, J-Lo. Jenny from the block.
Peace.
I've been seeing her all over my Instagram.
Okay, finally, finally, for the Oceania, it's the image Grant's Boat Shed, North Road by Elise Barlow, set in Australia, painted in 1920. This feels like the thing that we were talking about before, a colony, of a colony or a military base, because it looks like a fort, but it can also look like a country home as well with the imagery of what looks like to be a farm in a house near the water as well.
Also the colors, like, I feel like in the 1920s, I don't know if it's just because, like, I think of America, but, like, I feel like the colors were more bolder and darker and something.
Exactly.
And this is, like, very light and almost, like...
It's washed out.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of cool that it's really different from what you'd expect to see during that time.
So it sort of like looks like there's like moss on the roof.
Mm-hmm.
Roofs. So like maybe like more like, well, like less separated. Like because they're like a smaller country, they cannot like afford as much separation from nature and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Oops. Went away.
So that is it with the podcast of a guide through art. As we explored, we learned more and we discussed the analyzation of art and how it affected other cultures and how we can better understand our worldly neighbors, for us to gain a deeper understanding for not being ignorant to other people. So I would like to sign off. This was Tone.
I forgot. Hecate,
Diane,
Kratos,
Camel.
All right, enjoy. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. Peace out.